Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is June 17th. We're in Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Tes, Chapter 19, and we're up to Pasuk Yud Beis 12. So, David has, Yoav prevailed upon David to treat the victory as a victory, even though Avshalom was killed. And David begins to do so, and the people now, they begin to sway and realize that they were foolish in having driven David out, and now they want David to come back as king. So here we'll have several of the events in David being restored to power. So Pasuk Yud Beis. Now remember, David is on the east side of the Jordan River. He has not yet returned to Yerushalayim. Yud Beis 12. V'amelech David shalach el tzadok ve'alav yasar ha-kohanim lemar. The king David sent to Tzadok and Avyasar. Tzadok, the incoming Kohen Gadol, Avyasar, the outgoing Kohen Gadol, saying, Dabru el zikne Yehuda lemar. Speak to the elders of Yehuda, saying, Lama siu acharonim v'hashiv es ha-melech l'beisa. Why should you be the last ones to bring the king back to his house? Udvar kol Yisrael bal ha-melech l'beisa. And the word of all the rest of the Jews has come to the king to his house, meaning to bring the king back to his house. The people of Yisrael have already expressed that they want to bring David back, and David is saying that the tribe of Yehuda ought to be the first in line. Since he is from Yehuda, they should be first. Achayatem, you are my brothers. Atzmi uvesariatem, my flesh and my blood, or my flesh and my bones, are you are. V'lama siu acharonim, why should you be last? L'hashiv es hamelech, to return the king. So David here wants the Shevet of Yehuda to be the ones to bring him back to the throne. He sees that he has rallied, that the rest of the Jewish people have become excited about David coming back. Soon, they haven't yet made a concerted effort. Soon, they will come and want to escort him back with all kinds of an entourage back to make a statement that he is the real king. And David wants to preempt them and make sure it is his own Shevet that does this, that brings him back and makes the whole, with a whole entourage, makes a whole thing out of David coming back to power. So we'll see later at the end of the parak, the end of the chapter, how that plays out. Vila Amasa Tomru. And now David continues with his note to Tzadok and Avyasar. You should tell Amasa. Amasa, who was the general of Avshalom, since Yoav was the general of David, Amasa was the general of Avshalom, and Amasa is also just like Yoav. So also is the nephew of David. He's David's sister's son, and David sends a message through Tzadok and Avyasa to Amasa. Halo atzmi uvesariato. You are my bones and my flesh. So Hashem should do to me, and so He should do more. In other words, as bad as it's been, Hashem should do even worse to me. If I don't make you the general before me all the days in place of Yoav. So he's saying to Amasa that you are my kin, you are my family, and you are going to be the new general.
Before Hashem said anything, why isn't Aleph for the word Tomru?
I'm sure they do. I didn't see anything about it.
Maybe it means to rebel.
Yeah, that is what it means without an aleph. That is true. That's a good point. Good point. So now, so here you have two references to being David's family, his bones and his flesh. So David is sending to his Shevet, they should be first in line to escort him back to Yerushalayim, and to Amasa, that you're going to be the new general. So I don't hold it against you. That's what he's saying to Yehuda, and that's what he's saying to Amasa. Because Avshalom is also from Yehuda, and he had support within the tribe of Yehuda. So David is saying to Yehuda, I want you to be the first in line to take me back, and Amasa, I want to make you the new general. Va'yat eslavav kolish Yehuda ki she'achad, and the heart of the men of Yehuda, they turned like one man, as they all became very excited about this. Va'yishlechu el hamelech, and they sent to the king a message, shuv ata v'chol avadecha, you should return and all of your servants, come back. Va'yashav hamelech, so then the king returned. Now he's the one who orchestrated that the tribe of Yehuda should send this note to him. And once he got it, he returned. Vayavod Ayardin, he came to the Yarden, he came to the Jordan River. Yehuda Baha Gilgala, and the tribe of Yehuda, we're talking about thousands of people, came to Gilgal, which is the other side of the Jordan River. Lalechas likras hamelech, to go and greet the king. Lahavir hamelech es hayarden, to cross the king across the Yarden, across the Jordan River. They are escorting him back. So that is a storyline which we'll pick up at the end of the parak. So hold this thought here about the tribe of Yehuda and Amasa. New thing. Vayimaher Shimi ben Gera ben Hayamini. And Shimi ben Gera, the son of the Yamini, which means he was from the tribe of Benjamin, Ashemi Bachurim, who was from Bachurim, he hurried. Vayered im ish Yehuda, and he went with the people of Yehuda, Likras HaMelech David, to greet the king David. We're going to see later that the rest of the Jewish people did not, they dropped the ball. They didn't come quickly enough to escort David back. Instead, it's the tribe of Yehuda. But Shimi ben Gera, he rushes, and he gets there quickly. So he's with the tribe of Yehuda in escorting David back. Ve'elef ish imo mi Binyamin, and he brings with him 1,000 men from Binyamin. So he comes as well. And we'll see in a moment what he's going to do. Vitziva nar beis Shaul, and also Tziva, the lad of the house of Shaul. Remember Tziva, he was the servant. Vachamesh es asar banav, and his 15 sons. Ve'esim avadav ito, and his 20 slaves with him. Vitzolchu hayardin lifnei hamelech, and they split the Yarden for the king. At Rashi says, they took their shields and they linked their shields together, blocking the water to dry the area so the king could walk through the Yarden, walk through the Jordan River. That would only last a certain amount of time because eventually the water will pile up and go over the height of the shields. But whatever they did, they managed to block the water. I don't know if they kept on blocking certain parts of the Yarden as David went and they kept moving along with it. I don't know exactly how they did it. But this was a show of intense respect for David and a show of support for David. Now the people of Yehuda, they are interested in doing this because they want to show their loyalty since they supported Avshalom. Shimi ben Gera is the one who cursed David, so he wants to show his loyalty, and Siva already showed his loyalty. What's he doing here? He already showed his loyalty. Remember, he came to David, and while David had run away, he came to David, and he brought food for David, and he told David, David said, where's your master, Mephibosheth? And he said, oh, my master, he wanted to join the rebellion. He was happy that you ran away, so I came to support you. But nevertheless, Siva sees it as important that he come as well and show his loyalty and support for David. Now, he's definitely opportunist, but he also has to make sure to cover himself because Siva knows that once David is back in power, there's going to be a reckoning with Mephibosheth, and Siva's version of events may not be the same as Mephibosheth's version of events. So Tziva needs to show his solidarity to David, which he does. And we'll play that out in a moment. The Avra Ha'avara Lavir es Beis HaMelech, and the ferry passed by to take the house of the king across. V'lasos Hatov Be'enav, and to do what is good in his eyes, as everybody's trying to show David that they are behind him, they're with him. Everybody who had turned on him before, now they want to show their loyalty. But again, we're talking about Yehuda, we're talking about Shimi ben Gera and 1,000 people from Binyamin, we're talking about Tziva, we're not talking about all of Klal Yisrael yet. V'Shimi ben Gera nafal lifnei hamelech ba'avra v'yardin, and Shimi ben Gera fell before the king when he passed through the Yarden. Vayomer el Hamelech, and he said to the king, Al Yachshav li Adoni Avon, don't consider against me my master a sin. In other words, don't hold it against me. Valtizkor Esa Asher Heva Avdecha, and don't remember what your servant made crooked, what your servant did wrong. Vayom Asher Yotza Adoni Hamelech Mirushalayim, on the day that my master the king left Yerushalayim, Lasum Hamelech Alibo, that the king should take it to heart. Don't take it to heart. Ki yada avdecha, for your servant knows, ki ani chatas, that I have sinned, v'nevasi hayom, and I've come today, rishon l'chol beis Yosef, the first one of all the house of Yosef. Now, he's not from Yosef, he's from Binyamin. But he means from the rest of the Jewish people. Because traditionally, the tribe of Yehuda supports David and his children, whereas the rest of the Jewish people, as we'll see later on, when the kingdom splits, they're going to support somebody else. So I am the first one. I'm here before everybody else. L'redes likras Adoni HaMelech, to come down to greet my master the king. Now we learned before that Shimi ben Gera was wrong in what he did in cursing David, but Shimi ben Gera, being as great as he was, and he was of the greatest Talmidei Chacham of his generation, and David himself said, when Avishai at the time said, you'll recall his very graphic and poetic way of speaking, that what is with this dead dog? How about if I remove his head from his shoulders? So David's response to Avishai was that if someone as great as Shimi ben Gera is cursing me, it must be Hashem told him to curse me. And therefore, I deserve it. Somehow I deserve this. That was David's reaction. Because Shimi ben Gera is not of the rank and file. He is of the greatest. And if he did it, then David is assuming there must be something correct about what Shimon ben Gera was doing. Now, Shimon ben Gera here is admitting that he did wrong, but we learned at the time that Shimi ben Gera's motivation in cursing David was because he saw this as a message. The fact that David was losing the kingdom, he saw it as a message that the way that David handled and treated Shaul's family was somehow deficient, and therefore Hashem was punishing David as well. And therefore Shimon ben Gera went and joined in with that. And we said at the time that it's very possible that Shimon ben Gera was trying to make sure that David achieved a full kapara. But the fact is, he was wrong. He was wrong for doing it. And here he admits his sin, which also shows his greatness. No one else is going to admit a sin. Shimon ben Gera says, I did wrong. I admit it. Everybody else is coming here and they're showing their loyalty to David. But they're not coming and saying, oh, David, we sinned. What they're saying is, oh, David, we want you back. Right? But Shimon Gera is falling on his face. He's admitting an avera, and he's saying to please forgive him. Vayan Avishai ben Tsruya vayomer, and Avishai ben Tsruya, who has not changed his mind, he answered and he said, Hasach hazos lo yumas Shimi, because of this Shimi won't die? He cursed the anointed one of Hashem. Now, Avishai is saying that, I don't care what the excuse is. If you curse the king, you lose your head. It doesn't matter what kind of reasons there are, and you can beg forgiveness all you want, and it could be you will be forgiven in heaven. Could be. Could be Hashem will forgive you. But the fact is that you cursed the king, you get killed. Vayomer David said, what is it to me and to you, the sons of Tsruya? Tsruya is David's sister. Remember, the sons of Tsruya are Avishai, Yoav, and then there was a third one who was killed, that's Asael. So he says, what is it between me and you, the sons of Tsruya? Kisiuli hayom lesatan, that you should be for me today as a satan, meaning as one who's trying to get someone else to sin. Hayom yumas ish bi Yisrael, today will a man die in Yisrael? Meaning, I'm not going to kill Shimi ben Gera. Why? Ki alo yadati, for now, because behold, I know. Ki hayom ani melech al Yisrael, that today I am king over Yisrael. Says Rashi that Shimi ben Gera, that David was saying, when Shimi ben Gera cursed me, I assumed it must have been from Hashem, because someone as great as Shimi ben Gera wouldn't have done it without it being from Hashem. Now the truth is, it was Shimi ben Gera acting, thinking that it was the right thing to do, but Hashem never told him to do it. It wasn't through prophecy. So David was saying, I assumed all along that Hashem must have told him to do it. And even though now I'm being restored to power, but the fact is, I went through this whole problem, which means I did something wrong, and David is correct. He did do something wrong. This was a part of the punishment for what happened with Bathsheba. And David is saying that if Shimi ben Gera cursed me, then it seems that Hashem doesn't want me to be king. The fact that Shimi ben Gera is coming back right now and he's begging forgiveness, now I see I'm supposed to be king. I really am supposed to be king. He's doing me a big tova right now because he's emphasizing that what happened was really wrong, that he cursed me, and that really I do deserve to be king. And therefore I have hakaras hatov. I have gratitude to Shimi ben Gera for now restoring my confidence in that Hashem wants me to be king. Now it may be true that Shimi ben Gera is the one who undermined his confidence in the first place. But again, Shimi ben Gera was not acting out of evil. It was a miscalculation that he had. Now, again, Shimi ben Gera is still culpable because on his level, you get blamed even for a miscalculation, because if someone on that level is expected to not miscalculate in those ways. So he is going to be blamed and he is going to be punished eventually by Hashem. Really, David's going to orchestrate his being punished. But right now, David is saying the fact is he acted altruistically, and now the fact that he is coming to beg forgiveness emphasizes that I am supposed to be king, and therefore I will not kill Shimi. Vayomer HaMelech al Shimi, and the king said to Shimi, Lo Samus, you shall not die. Vayishava lo HaMelech, and the king swore to him that he will not die. Now later on, David is going to orchestrate on his deathbed that Shlomo HaMelech will make sure that Shimi does not die a natural death. And that is because David is going to repay the favor to Shimi. Shimi was acting to try to save David from Gehenna. David is going to save Shimi from Gehenna. And that is really going to be true. He is going to work that out. But remember, Shimi ben Gera is the Rebbe of Shlomo HaMelech. Just bear that in mind. It all gets very intricate and complex with who we're dealing with over here. So you're dealing with the man who is the Rebbe of the wisest of all men. So that's when we're talking about the stature of Shimi ben Gera, that's who we're talking about.
So this all seems very convoluted when David HaMelech or anyone else decides, like Yoav did with Avshalom, to help that person avoid Gehenna. You know, there's a lot of different calculations about, okay, well, I think I'll kill him for his own good. No, I don't think I'll kill him for his own good. And it just seems kind of random. It seems to me that the key pasuk here in English is, shall any man be put to death today in Israel? So, is all of this really just political expediency that he doesn't want to cloud his return to power by cutting down an important man?
It could be, but Avishai is arguing the opposite. Avishai is arguing, the same thing Yoav argued. That's why is David saying here, Mali, I meant to make this point, Mali v'lachem, what is it between me and you, plural, the sons of Tzruiah? This is a conversation between David and Avishai. Yoav isn't mentioned at all over here. Now, he may have been there, but he's not mentioned at all in the conversation. But David is invoking Yoav because Yoav killed Avshalom because Yoav said, what was Yoav's point, aside from the Gehenna part of it, but the pragmatic part of it was, you don't leave the one who rebelled alive. All you're doing is asking for another rebellion. Avishai is making the same point over here.
Right.
Somebody of Shimi's stature who cursed you, you can't. That was a public curse, and everybody knows about it. You can't leave him alive. He's got to be put to death because you've got to make an example out of Shimi ben Gera that you just can't do that. And if you do it, I don't care what stature you are, you're going to lose your head. And no one, therefore, will rebel. You've got to make that statement. So I'm not sure that David's response is that Avishai is wrong on political grounds. I think Avishai is right on political grounds, just as Yoav was right on political grounds.
Yeah.
It is what you do with the heads of the rebellion. You remove their heads.
Yeah.
Right? But David is not arguing from that standpoint. He's arguing from the standpoint of that the fact is Avishai is doing me a favor, and therefore I'm not going to kill him.
You mean Shimi?
I mean Shimi, right.
So my problem is where all these people are saying I'm going to save him by Gehenna by doing something not nice to them. David saved Avshalom from Gehenna just by calling him Bani. Wouldn't that seem like an easier way to go about saving someone?
I don't know how easy that is to do. I'm not sure. It worked, but David was under great emotional anguish when he davened. I'm not sure that it just happens like that. I don't know. It happened there, but I'm not sure how simple that is.
To kill someone has to be
A
lot of emotional anguish. To
yeah.
But I mean, that's not so
simple. I just want to say that the precedent that we have for saving someone from Gehenna by killing them is going to be David on his deathbed, and David is not criticized for that. What he's going to do over there in telling Shlomo that he must make sure that Yoav and Shimi do not die a natural death, David is not criticized for that. It seems to be it was the correct thing for David to do and the correct thing for Shlomo HaMelech to do. Now, you can't just kill somebody. There has got to be a reason for it that makes sense. Now here, Shimi ben Gera rightfully deserved to die. So it's not like when David instructs Shlomo to make sure Shimi gets killed, and you'll see later on when we get to Amir Hashem and Malachim, it's not that he says go and kill him. He says make him be Chayav Misa. Figure out a way that Shimi won't be able to avoid being Chayav Misa. But the Shimi did have a death sentence on his head. It wasn't like, well, you know what? We're going to arbitrarily decide to save someone from Gehenna, so we'll kill him. Same thing with Avshalom. When Yoav kills Avshalom, it's not like Avshalom didn't deserve to die. He did deserve to die. So what I mean to say is, they're not just pulling death out of a hat. You're talking about people who deserve to die, but there's someone trying to defend them, so do we allow the defense, or do we override the defense and actually carry out the death penalty? That's the debate over here. And in both cases, David wants them saved, and in both cases, the B'nai Tzruya want them killed. In one case, Yoav kills them. In the other case, Avishai does not. But eventually, David will go with what they're saying, and he will have Shlomo end up killing Shimon and Gera.
So my problem is still, right here, he says, I sinned, right? Shimon mm-hmm. and Gera said,
Yes.
And David said, I swear, you're fine. So then, to me, if I was Shimon, I would think, okay, I've done my tshuva, and my sin is erased. But the fact that he tells Shlomo to go kill him means that it wasn't really erased in David's mind.
Okay,
so
good.
That's deceptive.
Okay, so that we have to wait till we get to it in Malachim. That's a very good point. When we get to it in Malachim, we're going to have to discuss where is David justified. Really, you can deal with it on a legal basis. If he made a shvua, how does he go and turn around?
Right.
That we have to deal with in Malachim. That the Gemara deals with extensively at that point. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to deal with that. Okay. Now, Pasuk Chaf Hey. Now, here's the drama with Tziva and Mephibosheth. When Mephibosheth ben Shaul, Yarad Likras HaMelech. Mephibosheth, the son of Shaul, came down to greet the king. Now, remember, Mephibosheth is lame, so he somehow arranged that he got down to see the king. V'lo Asa Raglav, literally that means he did not do his feet, which means he looked disheveled and unkempt. And this particularly means his toenails were not cut. Now, we kind of, that's a little funny. First of all, they often walked barefoot. Second of all, he's lame. So I'm not sure what he wore on his feet. He didn't walk. So I'm not sure what it could be that his toenails were visible. Third of all, they didn't have convenient nail clippers, right? Cutting your nails was with a knife. Yeah, it was a process. So anyway, his nails were not cut. V'lo asa sfamo, he had not done his mustache, which means his mustache was growing long. V'es begadav lo chibes, and his clothing he didn't wash. L'min hayom leches hamelech, from the day the king left, ad hayom asher bo v'shalom, until the day he came back in peace. So Mephibosheth looked disheveled. Now, we don't have a time frame for how long this rebellion was, but it wasn't a day or two. There was a time frame over here. And during this entire time frame, Mephibosheth does not take care of himself nor his clothing. And he looks it. And now he comes down to greet the king. And it was when he came to Yerushalayim to greet the king. The king said to him, Lama lo halachta imi Mephibosheth? Why didn't you go with me, Mephibosheth? Now remember, Mephibosheth, who was David's Rebbe, was in David's house, being taken care of by David. Mephibosheth, the son of Yehonasan. And Mephibosheth is a huge Talmud Chacham as well. And so David expects Mephibosheth to be a supporter of David's, and he wasn't. And David had been told by Tziva that Mephibosheth was hoping to get his own kingdom back, that now somehow the Malucha, the kingdom, will go back to the house of Shaul. Vayomar, and Mephibosheth said, Adoni HaMelech, my master the king, Avdi Rimani, my slave tricked me. Which should come as no surprise, we're talking about Tziva. Ki amar avdecha, for your servant, meaning me, I said, ech b'shaliha kamar, I will saddle for me the donkey, ve'erkav oleha, and I will ride upon it, ve'elech es hamelech, and I will go to the king. Meaning when you were running away, I was going to go join you. Ki fiseach avdecha, for your servant is lame. So I was going to do that. But instead, Tziva grabbed the donkey, and he took off, and left me alone. Vayiragel ba'avdecha, and he told lashon hara. Vayiragel, that language, regel, is a language for lashon hara. And he spoke lashon hara about your servant, or rechilus, really. El adoni hamelech, to my master, the king. That meaning that he told you that I was happy about your being deposed. Adoni hamelech kemalach ha'elokim, and my master, the king, is like an angel of Hashem. Do what is good in your eyes. So says Mephibosheth to David, what you heard were all lies. It was lashon hara, it was rechilus. Remember, lashon hara is to speak negatively about somebody. Rechilus is to say something to somebody about a third party in order that will cause ill will between the person you're speaking to and the third party. So rechilus is worse than lashon hara. Lashon hara is just putting somebody down. Rechilus is creating strife. It's worse. So he's saying, you were told rechilus by Tziva about me, and now I submit to you whatever you want to do. Ki lo haya kol beis avi ki iman shei maves l'adoni ha-melech, because my entire house of my father was nothing but people who should have been put to death by my master the king. Really, we all deserve to die, because we were the ones who were trying to kill you. Vatasha says, Avdecha ba'ochlei shulchanecha, and you placed your servant, meaning me, amongst those who eat at your table. Umayeshli od tzedakah v'lizok od el hamelech, and what more is there righteousness or crying out that I can do to the king? In other words, I owe you everything. You could have put me to death. I deserve to die. I was in a family that was trying to get you for years, and therefore I really should have been put to death. You spared me. You took care of me. I have no complaints. Whatever you choose to do, you should do. Now, the thing in question over here is the field of Mephibosheth, the property of Shaul. Because when Tziva came to David, David told Tziva that he will have all of the property of his master. That's what he told him. If you want to read that inside, we'll go back to it just very quickly here. I don't want to take too much time. But we go back to, it's in Perek Tez Zayin, chapter 16. And it is in Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. After Mephibosheth, after Tziva told what he said about Mephibosheth, then the Pasuk says, Vayomer HaMelech LaTziva, the king said to Tziva, Hinei lecha kol asher leMephibosheth, everything that was Mephibosheth's is now yours. So that's the thing in question. Now, when David said that to Tziva, he didn't have the authority to do it, because he wasn't actively king. He didn't have the power of the king at that time. So even though the king can take away and give and reappropriate anybody's assets, the king has sweeping power when it comes to financial matters. As Shmuel told the nation when they asked for a king, he said, you understand, the king can take your sons and put them in the army. He can take your daughters and put them in the royal, taking care of the royal palace. And he can take your land. He can do whatever he wants. So the David, when he's acting as king, can easily take away Mephibosheth's assets and give them to Tziva. At the moment when he said it to Tziva, he didn't really have full authority to do it. But now the question is, what's going to happen? So that's really what Mephibosheth is invoking over here. He's saying, listen, what Tziva told you was a bunch of lies. It's not true. But I submit to the king whatever you want, because you really, I owe you everything. You could have had me killed, and whatever you say is fine. So back where we are in Perek Yates, chapter 19, Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. Vayomer lo hamelech, the king said to him, Lama tadaber od dvarecha, why should you say any more? Amarti, I said, Atavet Siva tachliku es hasadeh. You and Siva will split the field. So that David here compromises, and he says, okay, I hear what you're saying. Siva will keep half, you will keep half.
Before you go on, doesn't this seem wrong?
Hold on, we're getting to it. Okay. Let him take all. I don't mind. Let him take everything. Once my master, the king, has come peacefully home, I'm so happy about that, then Siva could have everything. Give him everything. I don't need to have any of the land because I'm just thrilled. It's enough for me that you've come back in peace. The Gemara, in discussing the things that David did or did not do wrong in his lifetime, the Gemara comparing Shaul and David, what Shaul did wrong, what David did wrong. So we know that David did wrong with Bathsheba, that we know. Although, we also know David was punished for what he did with Bathsheba. He's paid for it in spades. The Gemara says in having Uriah killed, that was not wrong because Uriah deserved to be killed because he was a Marid B'malchus. He was rebellious. But then there is a debate. And the debate is, Kibel David Lashon Hara o lo Kibel David Lashon Hara? Did David accept Lashon Hara or did he not accept Lashon Hara? What is the conclusion of this story of Tziva and Mephibosheth? We've gone through this entire, we've had Tziva come up several times in Shmuel Beis. We've had him come up several times. And remember, Tziva tried to already tell David that Mephibosheth was an Am Haaretz, that he knew no Torah. And in fact, Mephibosheth was a huge Talmud Chacham. We have Tziva bringing this food to David and claiming that Mephibosheth was out to rebel against David. And here we have the conclusion of the Tziva Mephibosheth saga. The Gemara debates what is the conclusion. Now we're not done with Mephibosheth. He's going to come up again later on. But at this point, with Tziva and Mephibosheth, what is the conclusion? And this is a difference of opinion in the Gemara. One opinion has it that David accepted Lashon Hara. Now, you know that you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara or Rechilus. You're not allowed to speak negatively about someone to somebody else. That's an Aveira in the Torah. We're not allowed to do that. There are certain circumstances that permit it or sometimes require it. Like, for instance, if I know something about somebody that puts you in danger, even if it's not mortal danger, but even if it's financial danger or something like that, then I'm required to tell you about it. But there are details that have to be fulfilled. I have to have firsthand information, etc. There's all kinds of details. But there are times where you're required to speak about somebody. There are times that you're allowed to speak about somebody, and most of the time you're not allowed to speak negatively about somebody. That's from the speaker's perspective. From the listener's perspective, we're not allowed to listen to Lashon Hara, which means if someone's speaking Lashon Hara, if we are able to get up and leave the room, or as the Gemara in Ksuba says, the reason why our fingers are in the shape of spikes is so that if a person is hearing something inappropriate, they can take their fingers and stick them in their ears. That's what the Gemara says. So that's what a person is supposed to do if they are able to, if they're hearing Lashon Hara, because you're not allowed even to listen to Lashon Hara. But listening to Lashon Hara is not nearly as bad as being mekabel Lashon Hara. Being mekabel means to accept it, which means to believe it. We're not allowed to believe Lashon Hara. And that's a critical thing, because sometimes we hear Lashon Hara, sometimes the person, the speaker, didn't even mean to speak it. And sometimes we didn't realize we're going to hear Lashon Hara. We heard Lashon Hara. Sometimes we can't get out of the room. And we're not able to put our fingers in our ears. So in those situations, and we hear Lashon Hara, we're not allowed to believe it. We're not allowed to believe it. This is a very, very important thing that is not given enough weight often. Because it can be a trainable behavior. When a child comes and says, so-and-so, my sibling, is taking candy, taking the cookies from the cookie jar when they're not supposed to. What should be the parent's response? The parent's response should be that, you know what? That sounds like Lashon Hara, so I'm not allowed to believe you. Wow. And that's it. And the parent should not go investigate, should not go to see what's going on. And that's a much bigger and more important lesson than stopping the child from taking candy or cookies when they're not supposed to. Because taking candy or cookies when they're not supposed to, okay, kids like candy, adults like candy. It's something we all struggle with all of our lives, and it's something which everybody has to deal with. But believing Lashon Hara is a huge avera, and it's a much more teachable moment for the child who's speaking that you can't believe him. And there, I can't act upon it. Can't do anything about it. So the question is, did David, was he mekabel Lashon Hara? Now, I want to emphasize to you that even according to the one who says that he did do the big avera of the mekabel Lashon Hara, this is the only time he ever did it. It never happened any other time. So just to put it in perspective, what we're talking about the possibility that maybe David once in his lifetime did chas v'shalom the avera of accepting Lashon Hara. That's the question. Now, according to the opinion that he did accept Lashon Hara, so that opinion says, Mephibosheth, that Tziva made up a whole thing over here. Mephibosheth was really loyal to David, and David believed believed Tziva. Now, why shouldn't he have believed Tziva? So the Gemara says, David, Tziva spoke to you once before about Mephibosheth. He told you Mephibosheth didn't know any Torah, and it turned out he was lying through his teeth. So how come over here you were so quick to believe Tziva? Now, granted, we're talking here 30 years later. It's a long time later in the story. Nevertheless, 30 years later or so, the rebellion of Absalom takes place in the 36th or 37th year of David. He rules for 40 years. So we're getting towards the end of his reign. The story with Tziva originally took place much earlier in his reign. So maybe it's not quite 30 years, but it's at least, you're talking about at least, you're talking about at least 10 years, at least. But I think it's more when the story with Tziva happened. So it's multiple years ago. So nevertheless, you know that Tziva has it in for Mephibosheth. He's trying to paint him in a negative light. And you realize that then you found that he was a liar. How come you believed him this time? And in fact, Tziva is a liar and he's an opportunist. And David should not have believed him. And therefore, the fact that he accepted Tziva's report, at least to the extent that when Mephibosheth defends himself, he allows Tziva to take half the assets. And therefore, David is guilty of having accepted Lashon Hara. That's one opinion. Yeah.
To me, it reminds me of when Shlomo later on is going to be with the dead baby and who's the mother. This is the same sort of thing. And he's kind of testing him, and by him saying, give him the whole field, he's showing that it should rightfully be him.
Okay, good.
So I see it as a test the same way.
You're saying that Mephibosheth is saying back to David.
This should be the famous story, not Shlomo. But
okay,
anyway.
Okay, okay.
Shlomo learned it from his father.
Okay, good, good. I mean, but it's Mephibosheth who says, I'll give up the whole field.
Right,
not Tziva.
Because he's
showing it. Tziva wants the whole field.
Okay, good, good. Okay. The reason why that story is so famous is because that's what put Shlomo on the map. That's right, how people found out.
From Daddy.
Okay, well, could be. Could be. Interesting. It's interesting. Okay, I like that. Now, the other opinion is this, that we read before that Mephibosheth looked disheveled when he came to meet David. Now, it says that he was disheveled from the day David left until he came back. That's all fine and good. So that shows loyalty. It shows that he's upset that David went into exile. But when you go to greet the king when he comes back, you don't go to the king. I mean, you never go to the king looking like a schlump. That's not acceptable. It's not overt rebellion, but it's pretty bad. I mean, normally the the servants of the king won't let you in. When you go to see the king, you're wearing your best clothes. You are recently bathed. You're recently shaved and everything like that. What happened when Yosef was taken out of the jail to go see Paro?
They
clean him up, shaved, changed his clothing. You don't go before the king looking like you just came out of the field. That's not how you go to the king. So Mephibosheth goes to the king looking this way. Now, there's two ways to interpret that. One way to interpret that, if we're going to be in the positive for Mephibosheth, it would be that Mephibosheth is trying to show the king his loyalty. That, look, I didn't take care of myself since you left because it pained me so that you left. But the other way to interpret it, which the Gemara says this is the other opinion, is that Mephibosheth actually was upset that David returned to power. That he really had been hoping that David would be lost and eventually the royalty would come back to Mephibosheth. And that's why he did not clean himself up to go see David, because it really did bother him that David came back. Okay. This is two opinions in the Gemara. Was David guilty of this Avera of accepting Lashon Hara because Mephibosheth really was really loyal to him? Or was David not guilty for accepting Lashon Hara because David saw in Mephibosheth an element of rebellion? It's probable that both opinions are correct to an extent. In other words, that there was some very small element within Mephibosheth that was not, that really was hoping to get the royalty back and that was really disappointed that David returned. It probably was not overt, and it probably was not on the surface. It was something which may have been very, very, a very, very subtle level. At the same time, primarily Mephibosheth is loyal to David, and Siva is a liar, and David should never have believed him. Whatever we're going to say about this disagreement in the Gemara, but the Gemara concludes, when David said, in Pasuk Lamed, verse 30, Ata v'tziva t'achleku es ha-sadeh, you and Siva will split the field, says the Gemara, the decree was handed down that Rechavam and Yeravam, Rechavam Shlomo's son, and Yeravam ben Nevat will split the kingdom. Wow. And it will be a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom.
Why is it so bad? Depending on which opinion you go, it's not...
What's that? What's so bad?
Why are you saying it's so bad? I mean, because of what he said?
Because the Gemara is saying whether he accepted it or not, he should not. He should have given the land back to Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth should have been the one to have the land, because at the end of the day, Siva's a liar. Mm-hmm. Siva's a liar. Now, even if Mephibosheth did show an element of rebellion, Siva's a liar. You just can't. And David is criticized here for giving Siva anything. And as a result, this is the beginning, this is the first seed being planted in the eventual splitting of the kingdom. Now, as with most things, there are multiple reasons for why it happens. This is not the end-all and be-all for why the kingdom is going to get split. And Shlomo HaMelech is going to be the primary one who's going to be culpable. His son Rechavam is going to behave in a manner that's going to create the split as well. As will Yeravam, the other side of the story. That's a whole other story in Sefer Malachim. So this does not mean to say that this is the only reason. But you know that often there are multiple reasons. For example, the Torah tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, he said to him when after Moshe Rabbeinu came to Paro for the first time, and Paro made the work worse, and he took away the straw. So Moshe Rabbeinu went back to Hashem and he said, Lama zesh lachtani, why'd you send me? Why'd you do this? So Lama harayosa lama zesh, why'd you do bad to this nation? Lama zesh lachtani, why'd you send me? And Hashem says back to Moshe Rabbeinu, Atasire, now you're going to see what I'm going to do to Paro. Says the Gemara, now you'll see. But you're not going to see what's going to happen in Eretz Yisrael, because you doubted me. And since you doubted me, you're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Now we know the reason why Moshe didn't go into Eretz Yisrael is because he hit the rock, which is later on. But this is a contributing factor is that he doubted Hashem. Or another way to put it is, when he doubted Hashem, that's when the decree of him not going into Eretz Yisrael was in its infancy. It still could have been reversed. He could have done teshuva, he could have davened, whatever it is. But when he hit the rock, it became set in stone. Oh, pardon the pun. Got set in stone, he couldn't change it anymore. Similarly, the Gemara tells us that when the Jewish people sinned with the golden calf, Hashem wanted to decree that that generation couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. But it wasn't yet decreed. There was still time to do teshuvah. But when we did the meraglim, when we did the spies, the two sins together combined for the punishment that generation were not going to Eretz Yisrael. You see this many times, that there's multiple reasons for something happening. Which means that if you only had one of them, it could be that it would have been reversed. It could be that it wouldn't have been as bad. But it's a contributing factor. This is the first of the contributing factors to the fact that the kingdom will get split, because of how David handled Tziva and Mephibosheth. Now, this is actually, to me, it's, I wouldn't say it's shocking, but I would say that given the way, the sterling manner in which David has dealt with the family of Shaul, all the way from the beginning when he's being chased and his life is on the line, and David will not raise his hand against Shaul. David is constantly looking to spare Shaul. Eventually he does chesed with Mephibosheth. David has done an unbelievable thing, which any of us who have ever been in a position where someone has tried to push us out or usurp us in whatever way that we've perceived it, we know that we don't react that well to things like this. And David has reacted well, beautifully, all the way through. This is the first and only time we see a possible mishandling of the situation, where if you say that he accepted Lashon Hara, it would seem that there lingered some distrust of the Shaul family of Mephibosheth. Even though Mephibosheth is the son of Yonasan, who's David's good friend, but there's some distrust over here. Now later on in Shmuel, before we get to the end of Shmuel, we're going to find, we'll see Mephibosheth is going to come up again, and Mephibosheth is going to be hurt by the Givonim, and we'll see that David is going to take it very personally, and he's going to punish those who hurt Mephibosheth. He's going to punish them drastically. So he's given up on Mephibosheth. He's turned his back on Mephibosheth. But there seems to be some small element of distrust over here, and David's accepting the Lashon Hara, if he did that, is a result of this small distrust.
Yeah. It feels to me like he's making the same kind of judgment that he did with Shimi ben Gera, in that here he is, newly restored to power, and he's showing excessive chesed to people. He doesn't want to punish anybody. He doesn't want to punish Shimi, doesn't want to punish Tziva. He's making a lot of concessions.
Tziva was on his side. Yeah, Tziva came to David with all the provisions.
Oh, that was a bribe. You know?
Yeah, I know, but
it's just an offer. He's on his own side.
I know. Good. No, you're right, but I'm saying it's not exactly the same thing. It's Mephibosheth who might be on the other side.
But I think that what we are specifically told about Mephibosheth, about his not trimming his beard, his not trimming his nails, these are things that testify to the passage of a certain amount of time. Your hair and your nails only grow, and everybody knows this, you know, a certain period of time. So these are the best witnesses he can bring to the fact that he has been loyal the entire time. Otherwise, it would just be his word. If he cleaned up and showed up and said, you know what, I mean, really, I've been very sad about this, he'd have no witnesses. He'd have nothing to show. You know?
That's the positive. That would be the defending his behavior.
It seems to me, on the other side of saying that there's something suspicious about him, it's complete supposition. There's nothing to back it up. There's nothing to shore it up at all.
He's got
this physical evidence, you know, that he's been in mourning, basically.
Yeah. The Gemara the Gemara actually reads it into some of his words over here as well. I think the two opinions are reading it into the Pesukim also. It's not just conjecture. I mean, they're reading it into the Pesukim itself. But it's true. I mean, this is the two sides. There's two sides to the story about what exactly happened.
Haven't we seen before that David HaMelech sort of errs on the side, if I may say that he errs at all, errs on the side of chesed and sort of not really being, you know, I don't mean this literally, but not being very astute, not being really on top of what people's motivations are.
Well, I don't know. I think he's on top of it. I think what he's erring on the side of it is to say, look, let Hashem take care of it. We don't have to do it.
He could have said that about the land.
He's the judge, and this is a financial matter. A financial matter
seems egregious to me. I mean, I don't.
See I know, I, but you see, a financial matter is different than anything else. A financial matter, you don't have the luxury of saying that. You know what? We'll just be stringent. We'll be machmer. With anything else, you can do that. With a financial matter, you have two people. Whoever you're going to be stringent on, you're being lenient to the other one. See, okay, you have to do something.
So let's say this. I mean, if in retrospect, what Siva brought was a bribe. Is David HaMelech being the judge in the case not being influenced by a bribe?
Okay, if you say that he accepted the Lashon Hara, it would be the issue. That David was influenced by it. That's what it would seem.
I'm with her. But I mean, I see her points. But the other thing is, Siva comes with his own servants every time. Isn't that like a slap in the face, saying, I'm not really a servant of Shaul's house? Because I have my own servants.
Well, David gave him, when David said to him, you get the assets, that's essentially giving him his freedom. That's what's happening. That's part of it, because he's one of the assets. That Siva is showing himself to be a free man. That's what's at stake over here. The assets are not just the field, it's also Siva himself.
So he freed him, but he didn't have permission to give him the land, so how could he have
permission and authority to free him? I'm sorry, I didn't fill that in. What happens is that now is when he has the authority. So whatever he says now is what's going to be binding.
He came with servants, so he have authority to free him, so to speak.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's coming with servants is already very important.
Well,
I'm back to my original point here.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Siva comes with physical evidence about...
None of us are saying Siva is a...
And yet, David HaMelech makes this decision that he's taking half of everything that...
freeing Siva, which is even worse.
Okay. As I said, the Gemara does lay this at his feet, that now the kingdom's going to get split.
If Mephibosheth is such a Talmud Chacham, why doesn't he see through Siva? And why doesn't he ever, if he's his servant, like, rein him in?
I don't know. It could be his physical handicap made it hard to do that. I don't know. It's a good question.
Can we go back to one point before we get too far away from it, which is when David is talking to Amasa, he seems to be getting rid of Yoav and putting Amasa in his place right then.
We're not done with that. That's going to be a lot of drama. We've got to go a little further here. Lama Beis 32. Ubarzilai Hagiladi Yarad Me Roglim. Barzilai Hagiladi, that's the non-Jew who was supporting David. He comes down from Roglim. Vayavor es hamelech ha-yarden, and he crossed the king across the Yarden. He accompanied him across the Yarden. L'shalcho es ha-yarden, to send them across the Yarden. He accompanied him. U'Barzilai zakin ma'od. Barzilai was very old. Ben shmonim shana, 80 years. Now, if you don't like the reference of very old to 80 years, the Gemara stops on this point, so we're going to talk about it in a moment. He is the one who supported the king. He gave him food when he was sitting in Machanayim. Ki'ish gadol hum ma'od, for he was a great man, meaning he was very wealthy. But Barzilai HaGiladi was a very wealthy man. The king said to Barzilai, Ata avor iti, you cross with me. In other words, come with me to Yerushalayim. V'chalkalti oscha imadi b'Yerushalayim, I will support you in Yerushalayim, I'll return your favor. You come with me, and I'll make you part of the royal palace. Vayomer Barzilai el HaMelech, Barzilai said to the king, Kama yemei shnei chayai, how much are the years of my life? Ki eles HaMelech Yerushalayim, that I'll go up to the king of Yerushalayim. I don't have that many more years to live. I'm not going to be around that much longer. What good is it going to be? I'm going to go with you to Yerushalayim. Ben Shmonim Shana Anochi Hayom. I am 80 years old today. Ha'eda Ben Tov L'ra. Do I know the difference between good and bad? Im Yitam Avdecha Es Asher Ochal Ves Asher Eshtek. Can your servant taste anything that he eats or he drinks? All the food tastes the same to me. Im Esh Ma'od B'kol Sharim V'Sharos. If I hear any more singing or songs, meaning all the music doesn't sound good to me anymore. I'm old. Why should your servant be a burden on the master of the king? I'll do is I'll cross the Jordan with the king. That's all. Why should the king give me this goodness? Let your servant go back, and I'll die in my city. Im kever avi v'imi, with the graves of my father and my mother. Behold, your servant Chimham, that's his son, Barzillai's son Chimham, let him go across with the king. You'll do with him what is good in your eyes. Now let's do with him what you would have done for me. So the king said, Iti Yavor Chimham, with me Chimham will cross. I will do the good in your eyes. All that you choose upon me, I will do for you. I'll give him the good. So Barzillai, one more pasuk. Vayavor kol ha'ames ha'yarden. The whole nation crossed the Yarden. Vamelech avar, and the king passed. Vayishak ha'melech leBarzillai. The king kissed Barzillai. Vayavarachinu, he blessed him. Vayashal v'mkamo, and Barzillai returns to his place. Barzillai is always remembered for good. And in fact, David on his deathbed, in commanding Shlomo, instructs him very clearly that you should make sure that Barzillai's children are always taken care of on your table, that he should be taken care of. The Gemara says, Barzillai, 80 years old, is not very old, says the Gemara. Now, even though we're talking about a time when people didn't necessarily live that long. David died at 70. Shmuel died at 52. We're not talking about, but Eli lived to 98. We're not talking, right? So some people did live long. But the Gemara is saying, 80 years old, if you're living okay, is too young to be at a place where the food doesn't taste good anymore, the drink doesn't taste good anymore, the songs don't sound good anymore, all these things, it's too young for that. That should be at an older age. It happens, unfortunately, in a very old age, where a person doesn't no longer has any, doesn't discern anymore the taste of the food, the drink, the songs, it all sounds like noise, you know, it doesn't, but 80 years old, says Gemara, is too young. Says the Gemara, Barzillai Hagiladi, who is not Jewish, was Shatuf Bezima. He was entrenched in licentiousness. It doesn't say that he was doing averos, but he was, maybe licentiousness is the wrong word for it, but he was very involved with that whole arena. And it could be it was all permissible. Could be he had many wives, whatever it is. But it's something that he was very, very involved with. And as a result, says the Gemara, a person who is shatuf bezima, a person who is involved in that, it's kafetz alehim zikna. They get old quickly. A person who is involved in that arena too much, then they age more quickly. And this is what the Gemara says as a general principle, general rule, that the person has to be careful how much they indulge in that area of life, and it makes a person age more quickly, and therefore Barzillai aged faster than was normal because he was involved in that behavior, and therefore he says it's no point in me going back with the king, and so he sends his son back.
Why does it mention 80 years old twice?
I don't know. Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I thought about that. I don't know the answer.
Is the word Zima related to Zona?
No. The Gemara says Zima in one of the Arayos. It says a man who takes a mother and her daughter, marries a mother and daughter. It says Zima. It's Zima. It's a, you know. I always think that I always find it to be ironic. Maybe not ironic. It's that there is an alcoholic beverage called Zima.
There is.
Yes, at least there was.
You mean
today in the United States?
Oh.
Z-I-M-A. I always find it to be very interesting. It's similar to the country Russia. The words they pick.
Right?
Anyway, okay, now, I was hoping to finish the perek today. We're obviously not going to finish it. We'll have to leave it for next week. But we still have to finish the drama of the tribe of Yehuda versus everybody else, which also then will get us back to Amasa and Yoav, which we didn't touch on. And Amasa and Yoav is going to become much more of an issue in the next parak as well. So Mitzvah Hashem next week, where we continue this this discussion of what happens. This is still all the fallout from the rebellion and the putting the pieces back together. So we'll see as we go along. Mitzvah Hashem.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.